John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have a great Friday here. It's going to be pretty good. Pete Carroll's going to join us at 11 o'clock. He's got this great project going on that Compete to Create. It really gets into the mental aspects of everything. And so we'll get into that. We'll talk about training camp coming up, the defense, the offense, all those different things. And there's lots going on right now. Curtis Rogers is back. And Curtis, how about the word coming out of Tampa that Donovan Smith, the left tackle, his wife is due for a baby in 3 weeks, and he doesn't think it's worth it to be able to play with the virus going on. I mean, he might be the first of many players in the National Football League that decide that, you know what, I can't risk it because of the family. We saw that Buster Posey in baseball is opting out of the season. You know, he just had twins with his wife. And so, you know, we're starting to see how the family effect is in this virus.
Yeah, it's a very real possibility that NFL players are going to face the same decisions that Major League Baseball players are facing right now. And you can't really blame them for, you know, thinking about their families, thinking about their own personal health. And there are going to be players that are more at risk than others, that if they do participate, they could potentially catch COVID. And that's something that I think a lot of players are going to take into account here over the next couple of weeks. And hopefully the NFL will have a plan in place where players who are at risk can still, you know, collect some percentage of their season salary, because you know they'd be playing at a time when it's not physically healthy for them to do so. We're going to obviously keep attention to those players over the next couple of weeks as training camp nears, but very real decisions being made by NFL players
here. Yeah, and of course coming up here, because camps are expected to start on the 25th through the 29th, but let's get into the five biggest stories of the day, the top five brought to you by us.
Number one.
I actually had a conversation with a friend of mine who works in a front office on the other side of the country for an NFL team, and we were talking, and he actually said, "So your Seahawks are really into Jamal Adams?" And I was like, "Excuse, like,
excuse
what do you mean
me,
by that?" Right? Yeah, like, what? Oh, okay, I'm interested. Wait. I'm interested. and they're another team that's interested in Jamal Adams, and he said, "Yeah, the Seahawks are absolutely pursuing the Seahawks are absolutely pursuing Jamal Adams in this situation."
So that's Jake Heaps reporting it. I don't know if it can work out, but again, you know, John Snyder, he's always going to have his hand in just about every deal that's available. And so just kind of breaking it down here. Now, the secondary is so overloaded right now, you know, with Bradley McDougal, with Quandre Diggs, you know, with Marquise Blair, and even Ugo Amadi, who could be safety or he could be a slot cornerback, that it's like, okay, does it make sense to be able to do it? But Jamal Adams is a great player. You know, it's going to cost about $14.5 to $15 million a year if he does indeed get a contract extension. But again, you'd have control over him for the next 2 years, and so he wants out. And so what you're having to think here is that, okay, so what would it acquire? And then naturally, if you give a number one pick, you know, that probably gets it done. But you'd have to think, with all the safeties that are here, that you probably have to include either Bradley McDougal or Marquise Blair to try to, you know, bring down the draft choice value. Again, he is a great player. He's more strong safety than free safety. And so as much as they love McDougal and as much as they love Blair, because they're both more strong safety types, I guess if you can get him at the right price, you can do it. Now, the problem is going to be the Jets. You know, the Jets right now don't want to trade him, and they don't have any need to trade him. But if you can keep your hands in it, that could be real interesting. So I'm kind of interested to see how that's going to go, but he definitely wants out. I mean, last year they were talking, the Jets were, to the Dallas Cowboys about a possible trade of Jamal Adams. He heard about that. He's certainly one of the leaders of the team. I know I've interviewed him on network radio, and he's very bright. I mean, he'd be a good fit in this organization, but we'll see. It's like one of those things where, hey, the odds may not be there to do it, but it still could happen. In other news, you can see that Quentin Dunbar is now asked for, and has been granted the permission to fly out of Florida. You know, he had been banned to stay in Florida, and so that means he should be able to attend training camp. And I would have to think, with the way this case is going to be, I don't necessarily know if the league is going to, you know, put any sanctions on him or anything on John J. Baker. Nevertheless, we'll find out if he's going to be back. But again, a great acquisition in Quentin Dunbar. And again, we'll talk about that and so much more with Pete Carroll as he joins the show at 11.
Number two.
I mean, you could get a third grader in Madison, Wisconsin, and have come up with a more cogent, intellectual message about where we are in college athletics than the one that the NCAA, the governing body of this sport, put out last night. And by putting that statement out there, they were essentially saying, we have no earthly idea what's going on. We don't have any control over it. It is the wild, wild west. So have at it. We can still disseminate some meaningless statements, but we have no more control than that.
That's Paul Feinbaum talking about the decision by the Big Ten, and it's pretty much, I guess, most of the Big Five conferences to play only conference games. So more is going to be coming on that in the next couple of weeks. But I know that at Ohio State, and even the Big Ten commissioner is not overly optimistic about the chance of even playing those at all. But the big thing was, now what that does is it takes the Huskies-Michigan game and cancels that. That's going to be September 5 at Husky Stadium. It also wipes out Ohio State at Oregon, which is scheduled to be September the 12th. And so there's going to be a ripple effect from that that we'll be able to catch up here as the day goes on. But you can see there's still a lot of big issues. The Ivy League decided to wait till next spring to be able to play. Pac-10 still is I guess they'll follow the model and just basically go with conference games. But I guess the big question is going to be, are those games going to be played this year, or are there going to be a delay? I mean, I think right now it's looking like October might be the first time you'll see a major college football game, but that's still to be worked out. You know, Notre Dame has a lot of problems right now. They've already had to cancel the game against Navy, you know, because they're an independent, you know, they've got a very short schedule because of all the conferences that they have to play against, particularly, you know, the two games that they have against the Pac-12 teams, you know, that's now not going to happen. And so they have to align themselves with the ACC, where right now they have six teams and six games, I guess, they can have. But pretty crazy right now trying to figure out what's going on in college football. Mike Yam from the Pac-12 Network will be joining us at 10:30.
Number three.
But to see all those dudes in T-Mobile Park, right? And, like, we haven't even talked about the pitching side of things. Like, the Logan Gilberts of the world. Like, the next wave of guys, including the guys who've kind of graduated, right? I mean, like, the J.P. Crawfords. Kind of think of Justice Sheffield as kind of in that class as well, even though we didn't see him a ton in the big league level last year. You see all those guys together in our ballpark. It kind of lets you know that this is not that far away, which is incredibly exciting.
That's Aaron Goldsmith, excited. And, of course, Scott Service is also saying today's game will be six innings as the first inter-squad game is going to go. You can be able to hear it on 710 ESPN at 2:30. Justin Dunn, Justice Sheffield, they're both going to be pitching two innings today. So there's going to be an inter-squad game every day until the team leaves for the season opener against Houston on July 24th. Again, you can hear the game at 2:30 here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Number four.
Well, coaching players like JD is easy. They're very talented. He's got a great skill set, plays a great effort. So, you know, again, I think John pretty much said everything that needs to be said about player acquisition. Our roster is not filled. We're still at 86 players. Work to get to 90 or whatever number the league tells us that we're working through. So I think John's got a pretty good grasp on how we're going to try to form our team and build our team, but coaching, you know, to your question, coaching players like Jadeveon Clowney is easy. You know, they got a great skill set and they play hard.
So that's Mike Vrabel, and of course they remain still involved with Clowney, but as John Robinson, the general manager, said, they can't do anything until they can get him to a physical, and that has not been cleared of anything around the league yet. Don't know when that's going to go. So Clowney right now, you'd say Tennessee, Seattle, and also the Las Vegas Raiders. Raiders at least made an offer lower than just about everybody else, but Clowney's still in the mix for Seattle. We'll see where it goes, but also I still think the possibility is he may not want to sign at the beginning of camp. Know he's going to sign for so much less than what he thinks he's worth. Meanwhile, you got Derrick Henry negotiating a long-term deal, and it doesn't look too good. Remember, he's a franchise player. You got 14 franchise players and a transition player that are up on Wednesday to get deals done. If not, they're stuck for 1 year, and then we'll see where that goes. I know that Justin Simmons, Kopecky of the Denver Broncos, the safety, is now going to sign his tender. So we're down to four that have not signed their tender, and that includes Unique Ndokwe, who doesn't want to be there and is planning to hold out.
Number five.
As far as football player, we won a lot of games together. I think he's an unbelievably talented football player. Then you get some of the questions sometimes, like, is he good enough? He's had a layoff, et cetera. You know, my personal opinion and really advice to NFL teams is there's only one way to answer these questions. Only one way to find out. And that's, you know, Colin signs somewhere and somebody signs Colin, and you know, you throw the balls out there and you know, find out just how much value he would bring to a team. My advice would be it'd be worth your time, and that you'd be, that NFL team would be very happy.
So Jim Harbaugh endorsing the idea of getting Colin Kaepernick, and there's more momentum now than it's been in 4 years to see where it goes. He was on ESPN radio yesterday, and so Kaepernick right now is the best quarterback available in free agency, and we'll see. But at the moment, nothing's going to happen, because with no ability to bring a player in for a visit, I mean, you want to visit with him first, you want to see how he is, because again, he hasn't played in 4 years, and also see what the financial consequences are going to be to do it. But I don't know. The odds are increasing, but I still think the odds aren't great for Kaepernick, but he got the Harbaugh endorsement, which of course is very important. Hey, you listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. So under further review coming up next, we're going to talk about Jamal Adams. Is it worth it? We'll see. Let's go with that coming up. It's the John Clayton Show.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Well, Jake Heath reported from an East Coast source that he talked to in the front office that there is definite interest with the Seahawks and Jamal Adams. And of course, even though it's, you know, you would figure the odds aren't that good, particularly as good as this team is at the safety position. But again, how can you not, ignore the chance to maybe get, you know, a blue player, you know, a top Pro Bowl player is going to be a Pro Bowler for many, many years. And of course, at the moment, what the draft choice compensation, what player you have to give up or players, you know, that has to be under consideration. But, he's scheduled right now to make about, he's got a $7.1 million cap number this year and a $9.86 next year. And of course, he wants to get a big contract. It's one of the reasons he's asking out to be traded, is because the Jets have not even started negotiations with him. And clearly, with Eddie Jackson being the highest paid safety at $14.6 million, he's going to be wanting, you know, $14.8 or $15 million. And he's certainly worth that kind of money. Now, if he wants $17 or $18, that's not going to work. But, you know, if you do pick him up, and, you know, it's a reasonable price right now, a little over $16 million over 2 years. But the question is going to be, does that mean you trade away Marquise Blair? You trade away Bradley McDougal? You would have to think that they're going to stay with Quandre Diggs at the free safety position. But let's go to the conversation that, you know, coming out right now as far as where it goes. Bob David Moore talked about that trade possibility yesterday.
They don't have a ton of leverage. Yeah, there are going to be a ton of teams that want him and would be willing to part with some draft capital, but would it be what we saw, say, Jalen Ramsey bring back in exchange to Jacksonville when he went to St. Louis, right? A couple of first-round picks, and would you get more than that? Would you get less than that? Because it feels like they're just in a spot where we got to get something out of this guy because he doesn't want to be here, and he's going to want to sign a new deal, so let's get what we can out of him.
When a team doesn't want to play somewhere and wants to be traded, and, you know, it really – I just think the teams are more likely to let them go than we think. Because, you know, you have a guy that's there in your locker room that's saying, basically, I do not want to play here. Yeah, that's that doesn't exactly lead the charge for enthusiasm for
when
the team.
It kills your leverage as a team, right? Because every other team that's interested in him goes, well, they have to get rid of him. I know they have to get rid of him. They can talk about how great he is, but he's made it clear he is not willing to play there, does not want to be there. And that's what team wants a malcontent in their locker room, a guy that's angry about being there.
Right. Well, and let's look at, you know, just Clowney. I mean, Bill O'Brien ended up paying, what, $7 million, I think, of the $16 million that
Clowney got.
Yeah, and really, I mean, he did. Look, I love Jacob Martin and Barkevious Mingo, but those, I mean, the difference at that time, to follow up on, you know, Moyer's argument, is that, yeah, I mean, that was quite a bit different. And then especially, you know, you get a guy like Bill O'Brien, who's kind of the boss down there, and supposedly the owner's afraid of him and all that. You know, he's gonna let somebody go. I'm with you, Bob. I think that a team will definitely let you know, so he's rattling his sword about a first and second rounder. I don't know about that. I think, you know, it gets down to camp time, kind of like it did with Clowney. It's like, this guy doesn't want to be here. We want to move on. All right, I'll take, you know, a player and maybe a second round draft choice or something like that. So, you know, I think right now he's saying that. But I think when it gets down to it, like you said, it's you might be able to get him, I don't want to say cheap, but I think get him for something less than, you know, it looks like on the surface anyway.
Yeah, so the question is going to be, what is the price? And naturally, as John Steiner does so often, you know, he goes ahead and tries to see, you know, keep his hand in so many deals and see where it goes. And so, you know, what you wonder is that, you know, would they give up a number one? We saw that Minka Fitzpatrick, the Steelers gave up a number one pick for him, and he immediately went there and was playing like a defensive player of the year. And Jamal has those type of skills. He may not have the interceptions, but he definitely has the hits. I mean, he can rushed the quarterback. He had 6 sacks last year and a good player. So what you wonder, it's like, and I'll throw this one to you, Curtis, would you be willing to take that on if you give up, say, Marquise Blair and say a second round pick, or Marquise Blair and a third round pick, or would you give up a first round pick?
I'd be very comfortable giving up Blair and a second or third round pick for Jamal Adams. I think a lot of people would make that move, especially considering for the kind of player that Jamal Adams is. And even if it is just a one-year rental, I think you can make good again at some other point down the road on what kind of player Marquise Blair could be, because I don't think you can find a Jamal Adams out there just willy-nilly off the street. That is a really, really good player that is young. He, you know, still has not gotten his second contract in the NFL, and he is on a trajectory of being a perennial Pro Bowler, potentially a perennial All-Pro guy, maybe even a Hall of Famer down the road. If the Seahawks could get Jamal Adams at some point and maybe sign him to an extension, that would be incredible as well. A first round pick, I'm a little hesitant to do that, but if you look at the Seahawks history drafting early in the first round, it's not the greatest over the last 5 or 6 years. You know, DK Metcalf, probably the best second round pick they've had since Bobby Wagner back in 2012. It's been a minute since they've had, you know, a string of great luck early on in the draft, where I think if the Seahawks were to give up one of those early picks, it may not hurt as bad here in Seattle as it would elsewhere, because they're usually picking at the back half of the first round or the back half of the second round.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, they never have a chance to get somebody that would be a 6th pick in the draft, because if you're considered to be a playoff team, you're always going to be drafting from 21 to 32. And John Snyder's used that ability to, you know, knowing that there's going to be a 75% failure rate in getting somebody that's going to be there for a long period of time, that, you know, it's better to trade down and get more value, which, of course, that's what he does. And but also you have teams, you know, like the New Orleans Saints, the Dallas Cowboys, who figure they're going to be playoff teams every year, drafting from 21 to 32, and they're willing to give up the number one pick. Now, the thing is, this is not a one-year rental. I mean, you get him for a $7.1+ million cap number this year, and he makes 9.8 and change next year. So you technically have him for 2 years, but you know, what do you do as far as the long-term deal, or do you do a long-term deal? So I just think it has to be, obviously, in this case, and first you have to get the Jets to even agree to trade him, which, of course, that's going to be the toughest one because they don't want to trade him. And remember, you know, they have Marcus May, who was drafted the same year as Jamal, as their other safety, and they're shopping him. They don't like him. They like Jamal, but Jamal doesn't like them.
It's interesting. You look at the personalities of Adam Gase, and he kind of reminds me of Bill O'Brien in the sense mm-hmm. that it's his way or the highway. It's just that Adam Gase's way has not ever led to a winning season, whereas Bill O'Brien has at least made the playoffs a few times in his career. And maybe, just maybe, the unpredictability of Adam Gase can work in the favor of the Seahawks or whatever team that's pursuing Jamal Adams, the way Bill O'Brien's unpredictability worked in Seattle's favor last year in acquiring Jadeveon Clowney, where they got him for, what, a third-round pick, Barkevious Mingo and Jacob Martin, who, as Dave Wyman pointed out in that clip, they're good players on their own, but they're nowhere near the same caliber that Jadeveon Clowney is, where I kind of look at Marquise Blair in sort of a similar way when comparing safety to safety, Jamal Adams and Marquise Blair, whereas you compare Barkevious Mingo and Jacob Martin and Jadeveon Clowney together, you know, it's just night and day difference. They're good players on their own, but they're not the same. So maybe the Seahawks can kind of play into Adam Gase's unpredictability here and make something happen.
Yeah. By the way, Adam Gase did go to the playoffs in his first year in Miami, but not after that. I mean, and we've seen that maybe once every couple of years. We've seen it probably about four or five times where you go in the playoffs in your first or second year, and then maybe you think you're better than what you are, and the next thing you know, you get fired in 2-3 years because, you know, the team doesn't get better, and you start chasing players away. But that's kind of the weird part of the National Football League. Hey, tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle. Remember, you can always listen to 710 on your smart speaker or app. Coming up next, we'll talk about college football, what's going on with the Big Ten, and also what's going on with the Pac-12. Mike Yam from the Pac-12 Next Network joins us next.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, I don't know what to say right now, but I got to figure out something because we've got phone problems. So trying to get Mike Yam, and it's not on his line. It's on our line here at the station. Mike Yam, of course, from the Pac-12 Network. And so hopefully this gets cleared up as fast as possible because we got to get a way to get Mike Yam on and also get Pete Carroll on at the top of the hour. So we got some big issues here. But of course, the news in college football was yesterday, the Big Ten decided that they are only going to play conference games. And so that canceled Michigan and UW, canceled Ohio State and Oregon, and, you know, canceled, I guess about 41, something like that, games that now aren't going to go. You know, and you can see that that's probably going to be the temporary model for what college football is doing. I know Paul Feinbaum was basically saying that what he anticipates is there only is about a 25% chance that college football comes off this year, and he does expect a delay maybe to the start of October. But, you know, none of that is etched in stone. Everything's all speculative right now. The only thing that's not speculative is, you know, that the Ivy League is not going to be having anything this year. They're going to wait till next year to try to open things up. So the challenge is going to be, okay, what can the Pac-12 do? And you have to figure there's a lot of issues right now because California, Arizona is just destroyed right now with the virus. And you still have more positive tests coming out that, you know, got everything, a lot of more each day. You find more schools that, you know, decide, okay, we're going to have to stop our workouts with athletes and all that. And, of course, you still got to make sure that the youngsters out there that are in college, you know, don't start to, you know, unbehave and, you know, spread the virus around, which I think is certainly happening around the country. But, yeah, college football is certainly going to be in jeopardy and all that. So I guess with what's going to go on in California and Arizona is maybe going to dictate where the Pac-12 is going to go. You know, you get the feeling from Larry Scott that it's iffy right now whether there's going to be any kind of college football. Very, very iffy. So, you know, would the Pac-12 consider even having non-conference games? I think at this stage it's probably no, but I guess maybe what they can do is have a few games against the Mountain West because there's not as much travel involved with those. But, you know, you wonder about what's going to happen with Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame's an independent, and if all the major conferences wipe out all the non-conference games, you know, they're going to struggle to get an 11-game season. And so that's not going to be good. But college football's got to figure it out. Basketball's got to figure it out. And right now, you still don't even know what campuses are going to be open. So you throw all that together, and it's a very, very bad situation. So, Curtis Rogers, I mean, what's your anticipation? Would you go with Feinbaum and say there's about a 25%? Would you go over or would you go under?
I think that what the Pac-12 and all these conferences are doing right now is buying time. And if they say, oh, we're going to go to a conference-only schedule here in 2020, and that buys them maybe a couple more weeks to then ultimately decide on what this season is going to look like. And I kind of am in agreement with Paul Feinbaum. I think it's going to be very tough for the 2020 college football season to start on time, even in a conference-only format. I think it's going to be... I think best case scenario, it's a spring season. I think that to me is, seems the most realistic here, just based off of where these hot spots are in the country, based off of where we're going to see, you know, this COVID kind of take effect next. It just seems like, you know, and especially in areas where college football is king, in the South, in Florida, and in Texas, and places like that, it's going to be very, very difficult for these conferences. And, you know, the SEC, I think, meets today. The Pac-12 will have a visit later on this afternoon between the presidents and athletic directors, so maybe we'll get a decision out of that. But I'm kind of in the same boat as Paul Feinbaum. It's becoming less and less likely.
Yeah, I would have to think so, and you can understand it. Now, the NFL still plans to go ahead, but now you hear more from the Players Association, particularly with Richard Sherman, who's on the executive committee, saying there's so many things that still have to be agreed upon that you know, he's starting to get concerned about the start of training camp. In fact, I think he's thinking about, you know, wanting to push back to start a training camp, and if there's not going to be any preseason games, which I think the Players Association is probably right in saying it, that you know, what you need to do then you start to push back the start of the season, which, you know, I don't know if that's going to be good or bad, but they need to work something out. But right now, I mean, you've got it's hard to work things out in college because the way it's set up from the NCAA, it's the conferences that have to dictate where things are going. It's not like it's under one big umbrella like the National Football League.
Yeah, and that, to me, I think is the most confusing thing about this, because the NCAA always acts as this governing body across college sports, and they've been so silent on this. They have yet to make any sort of decision on their own. They have yet to kind of say, hey, guys, like, let's all take a pause here. We don't want conferences getting ahead of each other. They've left it up to each individual conference, and I don't know if that is the best route that this should take. I think the NCAA needs to do something where they kind of step up and say, you know, guys, let's all take a pause. Let's all take a moment here, because right now it just seems like it's becoming less and less likely we're going to have a season. And now, obviously, some campuses haven't closed yet. But, you know, when a campus like Ohio State closes, where they are one of the blue bloods of college football, where they're, you know, a perennial playoff contender. Last year, they were one of the Final Four teams. When they are saying, you know, hey, it's not safe for us to hold practice right now, I think every team in the country kind of takes notice and says, whoa, hey, that's a big-time move right there. And especially, you know, we've seen other smaller schools on the college football landscape. I know my alma mater, University of Arizona, has said the same thing that Ohio State said. Like, hey, just because our state is not, you know, following protocol so well right now, we're going to shut things down and hope for something better here in a couple of weeks. So, you know, I think Ohio State being that domino, and then hearing what their, you know, university president said last night, where he's not very, you know, hopeful that a 2020 season gets played, I think that really has caused everybody across college football to take notice and say, hey, this is real.
Yeah. My worry right now is the fact that things are so bad because, you know, I don't care what's being said by politicians. I mean, this is now worse in this country than it was before when it started in March. Much worse. And so you can see that hospital beds are starting to vanish or be too filled up. Respirators now, you got all the problems that were there at the beginning. And now the numbers are even higher. And I think it's just inevitable. And the longer the governors wait that have these problem states of not putting the stay at home, just shut everything down, you know, the worse it's going to go, because all it's going to do is, you know, kill more people and also get more people with positive tests.
Yeah, and, you know, as we're trying to combat this virus, you know, the best thing is to not have, you know, any sort of group meetings, because when you have a roster full of, you know, 100 or so college football players, that's a big group of people, which, I mean, man, that would be very, very tough to justify in this climate of ours where it's just not feasible right now to have, you know, a big group of people meeting up with how much it's spreading right now. I don't know if you'd consider this the second wave, because it feels like the first wave never went away.
This is the first wave. I mean, you know, these things that like a chalk on a, you know, taking your hands and, you know, making that sound in the chalkboard. Every time I hear second wave, third wave, it's like, no. This is the first wave. If you haven't solved the first wave, then you have these extensions like this, and it's like the second wave is in the fall that when it revisits. But right now, this is the first wave.
Yeah, it absolutely is. John, Mike Yam, yeah. I believe he is going to be able to join us for 10:45.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So the phones are okay now?
The phones are, they're back up and running.
Okay.
So we won't have an issue with Pete Carroll 11 either.
Okay, that'll be great. So be sure to check out the Professor's Notes on 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Mike Yam from the Pac-12 Network.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, the phones are now working, so we're in good shape. And we thank Mike Yam for being flexible and being able to come back one segment later. He's for the Pac-12 Network. And, of course, Mike, thanks for joining us. And right now, Paul Feinbaum thinks it's about a 25% chance there's going to be a college season. Do you go over or do you go under?
Yeah, John, appreciate you you having me on. I take the over. Well, I'll say this. I'll take the over for sure if you give me the fall and the spring for college football. But as for it happening in the fall, you know, 25 seems like actually a fair number. I just don't know right now, logistically speaking, like how something like this gets done. You know, I was surprised by the Big Ten coming out yesterday and indicating that they were going to go all conference, and not surprised that they made that decision, just was surprised at the timing of it. You know, without there being sort of the signature leader for college football, I would have assumed that the Power Five commissioners would have been very much in line on this unified front, making the decision together publicly. So it was just surprised from a Big Ten perspective that actually happened.
But I know Paul Feinbaum is not the biggest fan, I guess, of management in the NCAA. He puts it all on the fact that there's no one leadership group like in the NFL and other sports.
Sure.
I mean, you have it's under one umbrella, but NCAA has taken it in a position. It's like, okay, we're going to let the conferences decide.
Yeah, yeah. I think the one thing that's ringing clear is when you have these situations, and certainly applies to sports because we're seeing that firsthand, and I'd say the same thing about just sort of the government, you know, you almost feel like, hey, let the Power Fives do whatever they want to do. And it all seemed well and good until there's a situation like this where there's kind of like this global pandemic going around. You just don't know how to make sure that everyone is in line and in sync. I mean, when you have student athletes across the country, and it's not just a Pac-12 thing indicating like, hey, I wish the NCAA would come up with some sort of unified testing. I don't know, and this is why the conference schedule makes sense, because if the conference is going to dictate exactly how the testing is going to go, and it could look different among different conferences where their schools are in different parts of the country, like it probably is a safer bet just to have them play within the league. But you almost think about the travel that's happening for some of these teams. You know, because of the conference realignment that we've seen over the last couple of years, to me it's just – you don't really mitigate the travel all that much. Like some of these teams are going to have to fly into different time zones, you know, over 1,000 miles or so. So it's just a different vibe.
Where do you judge where the Pac-12 is? Because, you know, maybe like the SEC, not even, they're in worse shape than the SEC because, you know, most of the schools are in bad areas right now, like in California, Oregon's
sure,
not doing
sure.
well, and Arizona.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that's what really caused, at least for me, a little bit of concern over the last couple of weeks. You know, about a month and a half ago, I would have felt really confident. I wouldn't have agreed with a 25% chance of playing college football. I felt like it was more like 75% we were going to get it done. But then you see the surge in cases in California and Arizona. You know, I'd make the argument, though. I mean, you're seeing in the state of Florida, they're having maybe the biggest surge. I saw a graphic last night from the New York Times that indicated, like, their positivity rate is extremely high, and the amount of contracted cases is bigger than anything that we've seen in the country. So I don't know if, as much as I'd like to point and say, hey, it might be a regional deal, look, the Northeast got hit really hard. They were sort of the epicenter of the pandemic a few months ago. And I think right now the rest of the country is sort of following suit.
Oh, yeah. And of course, Arizona, I think yesterday had a 38% positive rate, 38%, which is incredible.
Geez.
And, you know, I know, like, for example, Miami-Dade, they're at about 27.5, and it's remarkable how bad this is. And, I mean, you can see it's inevitable that they've got to start doing a safe at home. But the question is, how long is that going to take to get the numbers down?
Yeah, and I think that's why we're in the situation that we're in right now, John. And I think to your point on the positivity rate, because I've heard people say this. I was doing a show the other day, and someone had indicated, well, you know, like the testing numbers are what they are, and you kind of expect it to rise. I think there's a distinction between a rise in cases and the positivity rate. And as you just made reference to, you know, if you're hovering around 30% for a positivity rate, like that is unacceptable. That is insanely high for a virus that really can spread. And not to put on like a doctor hat on right now or anything like that. It's just, it's really scary. And John, you know this because you're as entrenched in the NFL as anyone that I've ever been around in terms of my career. It is a very different ask for professional people that are actually getting paid versus college athletes. Like, I don't understand how you can have kids, you know, or not have students on campuses and still say it's safe for student athletes. I think that's right now one of the biggest reasons why you saw the Ivy League decide to cancel their fall sports. And now you're seeing a conference like the Big Ten be the first to say, you know what, like this is not safe. We need to reel it in a little bit. And right now we're going to buy ourselves some time by making a decision of only league games.
Yeah. Well, how much damage will it do to a conference like the Pac-12 if they do have to go into next year?
I mean, it's, I don't know, John, I don't think it's a Pac-12 thing. I think it's a college football thing. I think it's catastrophic. You know, when you see a school like Stanford, for example, drop 11 of their sports, I didn't think you'd see that. I mean, that's, John, they got an endowment that's like $28 billion are sitting on property in California that's worth probably $230 billion. And I know people say, well, some of the money is earmarked for different causes in that endowment, but my Lord, 11 sports for a school that has really pushed this idea of being, you know, national champions in a lot of these Olympic sports. I guess the bigger picture point here is if you have the resources like Stanford and very few universities do, and they're feeling a financial push, I can't even imagine what it's like for a lot of schools, whether it's FCS, G5 schools, and the rest of the Power Five squads in this country.
No question. It's just a real bad situation. And of course, I mean, what are the plans right now as far as, you know, the eligibility and how they're going to count everything as far as if everything does go to the spring?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another big question, right? Like, and John, I'd say to you, like, is the NFL even going to move their NFL draft if there's a spring season? My guess would be absolutely not. So then you have this huge question. It's now 2 years in a row where you don't necessarily have spring ball. You have a spring season that buffers pretty closely to the start of that following season. So from a player safety standpoint, like, that's a lot of abuse in the sport of football on a lot of these players. And, you know, to be honest with you, like, what happens if you're a kid who says, you know what, like, I just don't feel comfortable with playing right now? What do you do with his scholarship? Now, I would imagine it gets honored, but, you know, like, there's just these overarching big pictures. And I'll take it, John, another step further. What happens if there's no high school season? How do these coaches go and evaluate this talent? Now, granted, I'm sure they've been doing these evaluations. We know, we joke that they, you know, they're starting in like eighth grade with some of these kids, but, you know, as a guy that's still waiting for his growth spurt, like, some guys actually do get bigger from their juniors to senior years in high school. Like, I just, you know, you got these late bloomers. Like, I just think there's so many questions right now that we have, that we're just not going to have answers until, you know, these next couple of weeks to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the high school thing, because the word started to come out that Texas may not have high school football this year.
Ooh.
And that started to leak out yesterday from some knowledgeable people. And then throw into this, it's like, and this is a more of a high school thing than it is a college thing. How are you going to get games officiated? Because, I mean, the pool of officials right now in high school is so thin that you now have to schedule games on Tuesdays, Thursdays, Wednesdays, just so at least you can find enough officials to be able to come back and do extra games.
That is a great, great call that I didn't even think about in terms of the officiating side of things. I don't know how you fix a problem like this. And I think, you know, we've compounded it, I think, as a society, and I don't want to get into this huge political conversation, but, you know, I've seen this a lot on social media. I've seen it in terms of the sports reports. John, you make a career on sports. You make your living on it. I do as well. We want sports to come back for obvious reasons. And I think in terms of, you know, youth sports, how much it actually helps in terms of personal development for a lot of these kids. You know, I can't help but think we saw that curve bend, right? Because we were all shelter in place, quarantining, not going out, wearing masks, washing our hands, being careful. And I think, and look, I get it. Like, I haven't had a haircut since March, and believe me, it is not a pretty sight. I just, I wish to God, like, we could all just say, all right, I know we're tired of this, but home stretch, man, like, if we sit here and we continue to do the things that we need to do, we'll be able to get some high school football, be able to get some college football. We'll get the pros that won't be freaking out about being in the sports bubble, so to speak, that might not be safe for their families as some of these athletes are pulling out of even the professional ranks. It is, there's, once again, and I hate to hammer home this point, but it just feels like we have so many unanswered questions. And without a unified front, whether it's college football or really even the government, it's really hard to establish protocol across the board that'll keep everyone safe.
Hey, Mike Gamp from the Pac-12 Network, anything that you've got posted everybody can kind of catch up on?
You know, we continue to do a lot of stuff at the network, and I know at least on the personal front, like any of these updates that we're hearing from the Pac-12 side, you know, I'll be tweeting them out at @Mike_Yam, but certainly same handle on the Instagram account where we're posting content when we can. But it's, John, it's wild, man, and yeah. I hope that next time I'm on your show, we're talking about the actual start of the season.
I think that'd be great. Hey, Mike, thanks for joining us.
You're the best, John.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Pete Carroll. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.